let's get on to today's conversation. Again, we have with us Heather White, the Executive Director of the Panda Theater, and Sean Beam. He's the President of the Board of Directors. And I think a good place to start, Heather, you're brand new.
I am.
tell us a bit about yourself, like your background, how you wound up in Sandpoint, and how you wound up with the Panda.
Yeah. So I've been in the Sandpoint area with my family since the October of 2020. And so I hail from the Seattle area. And we came over here at a late in life child and a little bit of a miracle, I think. So we moved over here for him just to give him a life out, you know, in North Idaho, a little bit different than being in Seattle. So that's what precipitated our move over here. I brought with me my role, one of my jobs at Boeing. And so my husband and I came over here with our remote jobs. And then I resigned that role and had another one with another global company. That was a SaaS model company that I had worked for some time. I was an FP&A manager for them. And then I'd resigned that role and took some time off to be just with the family and enjoy where we were living. And it came to my attention that the Panda was looking for a new executive director. And so I was super excited about this opportunity because I have both this corporate business background, but I also am a classically trained pianist and have run my own piano studios and have always been an active, you know, pianist and a teacher in that capacity as well. So this seemed like the perfect marrying of both personas of my artistic side as well as my business side. So I submitted my resume and application and was invited to a couple of interviews, and so here I am.
So what describe your work with Boeing and the other companies a little bit. It'll give a bit more about your financial background.
Sure. I had, I've had two tenures at Boeing, and I did a couple of different roles for them. They were both financial capacity roles as well as auditing roles. And I spent the majority of my time on the defense side, so heavily regulated by our friends in the federal government. The budgets that I was dealing with were substantial, well into the billions of dollars, obviously, for the products that they were selling. And then the auditing roles that I did were both, one was on the defense side, and then I also was in corporate audit. So I got the opportunity to go to the commercial side of the house and see and participate in audits with regards to the 737 program, 67, all the major aircraft programs. I also had a FP&A role as well. So FP&A stands for Financial Planning and Analysis. So we're the other side of finance. So you've got your accountants that deal with, you know, all the accounting, the journal entries, and taking care of the books. But FP&A is on the other side where we actually analyze and tell the story of what's going on. And then we're responsible for projecting out into the future what we think we're going to be able to accomplish financially. So typically you're looking about 5 years ahead. So we lean heavily on our accounting partners and then our commercial, marketing and sales teams, and to really draw in what that story looks like going into the future. And then we project that out. And then I had that same type of a role with a company called OPSEC Security Online. They recently were bought out by another company called NXT Crane, but they were an online company that did brand protection, anti-piracy, and anti-fraud services. And so the same role, I was an FP&A manager for them. And again, I was responsible for a substantial annual budget. And then we were looking ahead into the future, you know, with the numbers to see what we could come up with for our plans for the future.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that type of storytelling, financial storytelling.
So those are very useful skills for this position you have, I presume, although you're working on a little different scale.
Yes, the decimal point's in a different spot, but it's the same concept, right? You're looking at what your budgets are, what's driving, you know, your expenses, what's driving your revenues, and then trying to put that story together into the future.
So because the Panda is all about performance, tell us a little bit about I guess it's your avocation or your love for piano.
Sure. So I have a degree in music, and I've always been a pianist. I come from a large family, and I was one girl out of five brothers for a long time. So my dad came home from a business trip one day with a piano, and it was for me. And so I think I was about, I think, 6 years old. And so I immediately got piano lessons and pursued that all the way through high school and then prepared for collegiate level studies. And so that's one piece of me that just will never go away. I feel like I'm always a musician at heart. And I did run a private piano studio over in the Seattle area, and I did that parallel to my role at Boeing. And it grew so big and was so successful that I ended up resigning Boeing for a while to do that full time, because I was working two full time jobs at the studio and Boeing. But I continued my studies into my adult years as well. I studied with a great pianist out of Seattle, and I do have a piano in my home that I'm very proud of. But right now I'm not practicing for obvious reasons because I'm a little bit busy.
Hey, another full-time job.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Piano for the office, maybe.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. But
there is a grand piano down there on the stage. You
know? I know there is.
I don't know if you've rolled that out yet.
I haven't rolled it out, but I know where it's at.
Yeah.
And then I did get to spend a little bit of time teaching at the Music Conservatory here in town as well. When I came to town, I introduced myself to Karin Wiedemeyer, the director, and I did get to spend some time working with some students at the conservatory as well. So that was really fun because it really started to embed me in the community here, and then getting to work with the younger children here as well.
So you're only a month in at this point, but give us an idea what a day in the life of the Panda executive director is.
Well, let's see. I started November 1st, and we are on November 26th, and there has not been any consistency at all. From a day-to-day perspective.
Yeah, a lot of drinking from the fire hose at this point. Yeah.
It is. I will get to, I got to go to lunch the other day with our Kiwanis friends in town, and that was really fun. I got to meet some more community members and hear about what they're doing. I've been working a lot with our staff, of course, and then getting to know the board. And then we also had a fundraiser last Friday. So that was another, new event and out in the community yet again. So I feel like every day is quite different. And every day I get to meet more and more people, and I get to hear their stories and how they've been involved in the Panda for many, many years. So it's really fantastic, one, to get to know more people, but then also to hear about their love of our theater and how they've contributed their time and their talents and, of course, their finances to help support us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. In my judgment, the Panda is one of the most loved institutions we have here in town. Everybody has a shared experience within the Panda, and that's one of its great values, I think. It's a place where people come together and share really neat experiences. Well, thanks for all that, Heather. And Sean Beam, president, give us a little bit about who you are, the guy back there running.
The guy behind
the board.
Guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I moved here 17 years ago from the evil empire of Los Angeles, California. Mm-hmm. I was a union electrician down there for 20 years, and my wife and I decided that we wanted to slow things down, similar to Heather. Our daughter was in grade school, so we moved up here then. I started my own business in Sandpoint, which is interesting, not knowing anybody during a construction, 2008 housing crisis and all that stuff. Not a lot of construction was happening, but we got out there and we were able to build, what I would consider a successful business in this town. And it's been a great experience. And the thing I love about Sandpoint is everyone welcomed us and everyone helped us out every turn that they could. It's been a great experience moving here.
And do you play piano?
I do not play the piano. I mean, I actually can. With enough cocktails, I can play the piano, just not successfully. Yeah.
Well, what is it that drew you to volunteering for the Panda?
I was in my office one day, and I was on Panda's mailing list, which is, if you're not, go to panda.org and get on the mailing list. And then an email came out saying they were looking for board members. At the time, my business was in a flow, but still very stressful. So I was looking for something to do sort of outside myself, not just be focused on my business or what was going on internally for me. So I reached out to the Panda and applied, and then went and got interviewed. I was interviewed by Terry Pardini and Caitlin Shook. Terry lied to me. She said that it would, I asked what time requirements were. She said 1 hour a week or 1 hour a month. Sorry. She still denies that, but that's what was said. So I was like, oh, 1 hour a month, no problem. And
you got to record those, yeah. those initial reach outs yeah. On any board position in this town, actually. Yeah.
So, against their better judgment, probably they put me on the board. And unbeknownst to me at the time, there was a lot of turmoil going on internally with the Panda. Shocker.
This was two and a half, 3 years ago.
Two and a half years ago. So there was a complete sort of turnover on the board. And within 6 months, I was board president, chairman of the board. And really, you know, talk about drinking from a fire hose. Yeah. Luckily, at the time, Jim Healy was still involved. He was instrumental in giving me advice on how to handle certain situations or even how to run a meeting or put an agenda together and all that stuff. So that's my story of how I ended up at the Panda.
Both Jim and Terry have put in a ton of time.
I call Terry the oracle of the Panada. If there's any question I need answered, she knows.
Well, they're not in the studio with us, but let's run through who the rest of the board is just to give the community an idea. There's Charlotte Solly, she's vice president.
Yeah, Charlotte's my right-hand woman, so to speak. She's amazing. She's a true warrior. If you ask her to do something, she gets on it and she gets it done. She's a very hard worker. When our last executive director resigned, she was one of two people that were instrumental in keeping the Panada afloat during that time. She works 3 days a week at Kiniksu, and then her 2 days off, she spent fully in the Panada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not a full-time job, but kind of a like a part-time job it becomes.
Well, as soon as she got off work, she was involved with the Panada, too. Yeah, it became a lot.
Okay, Amy Flint is secretary of the board.
Amy Flint is secretary, yeah. She's a retired professor. She is our resident spell checker and paragraph corrector. She's great, too. She takes great notes for me. She assists in grants and fundraising. She's a lot of fun to work with. She keeps focused. And she also is, I think, chairman of the board of the library. So
yes, she is, as a matter of fact. Woody Sherwood is treasurer.
Woody Sherwood is another amazing person. I could say this probably about everybody on the board. He was basically, I'm not going to call him interim director, executive director, but he was interim executive director. He was in there every day at the desk, you know, learning, going through old emails that the last executive director had left, and really kept us going financially. He's the treasurer as well. He's really smart with our money, and he's helped out a lot.
Mm-hmm. And you have three other directors, board members. They're Andreas Nicolades.
Yep, Andreas. He's on grants and fundraising. Mm-hmm.
Dan Thompson.
Dan Thompson, who can fix anything and has done anything in the theater. We might end up with a third story on the Panada pretty soon if we don't watch him. He's going to town inside that place.
Actually, I think I saw him at work when I was in there yesterday. And then Rory Cray.
Yeah, Rory Cray is our newest board member. I'm a little upset Rory's on the board now because I was the youngest board member up until Rory got on. Now I'm
he's the young blood.
He's the young blood, yeah.
Start grooming him now for
he's our tech
for
guy.
The future
he's
roles. Great. Yeah. Okay, and I don't want to mention the Panada staff too, because they've obviously helped keep things going. Caitlin Shook, you already mentioned her name.
Who's
Caitlin Shook?
Heather just reminded me we have Ruth Lever is also a new board member.
Right.
She's not on the site yet. Yep. She's just brand new in October.
That's my apology.
She's a longtime volunteer.
Yes.
And she's expressed a desire to get on the board. Thank you, Heather.
I should have known that too, but I am looking at the webpage, so I'm
kinda... Yeah, that's currently being updated with new pictures, and everyone will be on there.
Yeah, good. Good idea. New pictures. Good idea. There's a couple of good
Believe me, we've got some on there. We had professional pictures.
Yeah, well, good. Okay, let's talk about the Panda Theater staff. So Caitlin Shook, you mentioned her. What does she do there?
I'll let Heather answer that.
I believe her job title is events coordinator. Mm-hmm. I would say people have job titles, but it's that and then everything else that I'm learning. So we have Caitlin, who is also a performing artist and will be on our stage this weekend with her sister and John Craigie. But Caitlin spends a lot of time taking care of our contracts and really working one-on-one with our renters and with our artists that are coming in. And then we have Brendan Naples, who is our operations director. And so he does a lot of work with Caitlin in conjunction. Once she does her role, then rolls over to him.
To actually get something on the stage.
Yes. Yeah. So he does tech work for us. And I know he does projection work on the side as well in alignment with Doug, who is also...
Doug Jones.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Also on our staff. And Karen Davis is our office manager, and she does a lot of our financial accounting work for us, so far that I know about.
And I will mention there's no Heather White on this webpage, so
forthcoming, okay. Chris, forthcoming. We are redoing the page. Actually, everything went to our website host people yesterday, so it'll be updated soon enough. Yeah. And one thing I want to point out, people's pictures that aren't on there are the long list of volunteers that make every event possible. A few standouts, I probably shouldn't name them, but Nancy Iacovone, who does a lot of work with the coordination of the people. Carlos, who's done a great job with helping us out on what we need in the bar and helping us in transition. Regina behind and Beryl behind the concession stands are always willing to pin me down with some hard questions immediately when I walk in the place. I have to remind them that I'm there for social time sometimes too. So, but yeah, the volunteers are awesome.
And if you are listening and you want to volunteer at the Panda, it's pretty fun.
It's amazing.
It is. I mean, whether you're serving popcorn or taking tickets or helping clean up afterwards, you just go to the website and connect.
We're currently holding competitions. I was former champion of popcorn serving through an event, but it's how many bags you can get out at one time. It's pretty interesting.
Back in my day, I was pretty good on the old popcorn
scene. I think I suffered shoulder injury the night I did it, but I'm still here.
Actually, it's a pretty good deal on popcorn compared to most theaters. So you actually brought this up yourself. The Canada has actually been on a bit of an unsteady basis here, really since probably COVID, right? That's when our long-term executive director, Patricia Walker-White, left the theater. The board, the theater was closed entirely for a while there during COVID. And then the board came back and they actually ran. Jim Healy and Terry Pardini, you already mentioned them, and other folks really did a lot of work to keep the Panda, light it back up again. But the last 4 years, we've had four different executive directors. So that's a question I think our listeners want to know. What do you attribute that to? And then in bringing on Heather, what were you looking for in this hiring?
Well, I've been involved with the Panda for 2.5, almost 3 years. This is my opinion of it. I'm sure other people have other stories. As I look at it, I think our number one problem the Panda has had and why it's tough to retain an executive director is there were no processes behind the scenes, and there still aren't a lot of process behind the scenes. So every new executive director had to come in and sort of redo what the last person did, if anything at all. None of it was documented. There are no written processes on everything. When I first started getting involved and when I was chairman and started digging into processes and procedures. In my career, it's sort of very linear thinking a lot of times. So I was looking for that. I was just constantly told, this is how we do it. And I'd ask, well, why do we do it that way? And the answer would always be, well, that's just how we've always done it. So there's that aspect of it. I think the other aspect of it, and I can only speak for the executive directors I've dealt with, that there's the thought that, the Panda is a theater and it's an event space and it's a place for the community, which is true. But there's the flip side of that. And the flip side of that, that it's actually a business. It's a nonprofit business, but that's a tax status. Nonprofit does not mean we should not be making money. We need to make money for a couple reasons. We need to make money because, one, we're in charge of a 100-year-old building. And one of the duties of the board is to maintain the building. And we want to maintain it for the future in perpetuity for the city of Sandpoint and for the community members. Two, we need to make money at these events because we have staff that's on staff we have to pay for. And we want to be able to pay these people good money for what they do. For me, three, and not
good, like good money being a living wage.
Living wage in this town, which is obviously drastically changed over the last 5 years. We want good people that can work there but can also live in town. And then the third reason, these aren't in specific order necessarily, because this is probably most important as well, is a lot of the stories we hear about people's experiences at the Panada, it was involved their children dancing on stage or they were kids up there. And a lot of these nonprofits in Sandpoint that are customers of ours that use our space, they have financial pressures on them as well. So we want to be able to make the theater accessible to them in a responsible way financially. And if we can offset that by making money on bigger shows or through donations, then we can make the theater more accessible for these other nonprofits in town. So I think that was something that was missed by some of the former EDs, that, you know, business is a big part of what we do. And when we went on the ED search, I've told this to a few people, I was sitting there and I'm like, we need somebody that has a degree in the arts and somebody, you know, is there somebody that has a degree in finances and a minor in like art or theater or something? I'm like, does that person even exist? And in
walked. You need to record these statements as proof that you were.
I was right. Okay. I was doubting and then I was right. And then Heather walked in her first interview, she walked into a Zoom interview and we got her background. I looked at her resume and I was like, she has a degree, a bachelor's in arts piano, and she has a master's in business. I'm like, right away, I was, you know, super stoked, to use chairman of the board language, you know, very official stuff. And it's what the Panada has needed. Someone that's a linear thinker, that knows process, knows operations. Her background at Boeing with auditing and all the work she's done there is going to set the business up with some kind of structure that we can actually operate in a budgetary way, where we know what we're making, we know what these fundraisers make. There's grants we've gotten where it's like we get a grant for $2,500, but it costs us $5,000 in overhead to administer it. That's not really smart business. We pay artists a certain amount of money to be there. The community loves it, but it's a negative loss. It's a loss for us in the end. That doesn't work long term for the Panada. And coming up on the 100th birthday, it's like a perfect time, and I think that Heather is the perfect executive director to really make that shift for not just for the Panada, but for the community. Mm-hmm. I've said it many times, there's pressure on this community as people see through developers, and we're losing properties left and right. The Panada is not permanent structure. The Panada could be lost to the community like it almost was lost in 1985. It's not just there forever. Paul Gunter jokingly said, oh, maybe a developer will buy it and call it Panada Heights and turn it into condos at some point when we were together. We want to fight that.
That's not even a joke.
No.
The way things are going.
It was an answer to a comment I made at an arts presentation, but I'm out there pounding the drum, and Heather's going to be it too. It's the days of everybody just sitting out of the Panada space and coming in for a $5 movie occasionally and not financially contributing to what we're doing is going to be detrimental to the Panada in the long run.
I'll tell you what, we're going to circle back on finances and fundraising here with some other questions I have. But let's talk about, you know, the role the Panada fills, right? I mean, it's a historic building. You kind of touched on that. I'm going to rattle off from the website. I'm sure it's accurate.
It's totally accurate, except for Heather's picture's not on there.
The mission of the Panada Theater. So the Panada Theater is a committee. It's a nonprofit organization. And we talk about the theater. We mean both the building, but also the organization. The mission of the Historic Panada Theater is to share and protect the historical integrity of the Panada Theater as a center of entertainment, education, and community involvement. So it's partly save the building, but it's also to be a center for the performing arts. And so, Heather, as you kind of look at your role, and I'm sure that you have been envisioning a lot of different ideas, how do you see embracing that idea that it's a center for entertainment, education, and community involvement?
Well, I think we do that already. I would love to blow that up and make it even more, especially for the kids, right? So I was a piano teacher educating mostly young kids, but all the way up to, you know, some of my older students were in their 80s, you know. So when you think of piano students, I know naturally we go to the younger kids, but students and kids of all ages, right? But I think I love the mission of this theater. And in fact, when I applied for the role, that's the first thing I did was go look for their mission. And I think that's very accurate, and I think that's going on. But I want to cast a really big wide net and make sure that we're capturing the interest of everybody within our community, that as we do our programming and we put some strategy around our programming, that we are touching each component within our communities to bring them in. Because one of the other challenges is, you know, for when I was interviewing and talking with the board, I was like, well, how do we get Heather off her couch in the dead of winter to come down to the theater, right? How do we do that? How do we get the Heathers and everybody else to come into the theater, to come into town? And I think if we do some really smart programming and continue what we have, because I think the base is there, but I think we have an opportunity to make that really big. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you know, it's a vaudeville house. It's a vaudeville movie house, and that's there's tons of those.
When it was built in 1927.
Yeah, and there are similar theaters all around. There's, you know, up and down Idaho, but also in the adjacent states. And I would love to bring some vaudeville productions back here. You know, that's what this theater originally was for. And I know that we've got vaudeville acts that are out there at other theaters. So really, like, tapping into these other theaters, really partnering with them and seeing what we can bring back to town, and keeping the arts really, really alive from not just the movies, but all these different types of productions. And I think that feeds into the education of everybody, right? And then for the younger ones that are studying seriously the piano or other instruments, or they're studying theater, to give them the opportunity to get out on a stage like that in a real theater and to express themselves with the talents that they've got, I think is a really beautiful thing. And so it feeds the education of the person that's on the stage, but it also feeds the education of the audience member as well, and having them participate in that capacity. So that educational element also feeds the beauty back to the community and the experience of the arts. Mm-hmm. So I think it's there. I just want to make it even bigger and mm-hmm. better. And I think we can. With that, I think we have to look at the money or the budget and the numbers behind all that, and make sure that we're being smart too, mm-hmm. because the responsibility is to carry that forward into the future, right?
If you're just tuning in, this is the Carefly Morning Show, and we have with us today Heather White, Executive Director of the Panda Theater, and Sean Beam, he's the President of the Board of Directors, and we're talking about all things Panda, and really about the organization and how the Panda runs. So part of running it as a business is mm-hmm. getting in high dollar acts that will, you know, produce a lot of money, which could be, in my mind, that might be a touring musician. I mean, I watched Taj Mahal in the theater, yeah, and Joan Baez there. I don't know if those turned out to be a lot of money for the Panda, but that's a ticket that somebody in a big city would pay $100 for. Mm-hmm. You know, even though we know we try to keep prices affordable for locals here,
correct?
There's that dual need to also have shows that are gonna produce some revenue, so you can bring in a bigger act. They take more money right off the top because they command a higher fee. So there's that need. But you got to balance it against the fact that we want the Panda to be a place where a dance studio can have an act.
Correct.
Yeah. So how do you see mixing those two needs and figuring out how to do that? And I guess a second part of that is, are you looking for those big name acts that may be turning through that you can get into the theater to have more, you know, big name concerts, say?
So I think it's going to be a fine balancing act, right? In the sense, pun intended, meaning when we look at this, because it's logistics as well. Like, we can't have everybody in there every day, so we have to look at what we've got in the future. We've got our partners here in town that utilize the theater and that they're already on the calendar for next year. So we've got to look ahead and see, okay, what do we have available? But I think you hit it, right? We're going to have to look at some of those high dollar acts. How do we get them in, you know, and schedule that out while we balance that against our local community and what their needs are for the theater and folding that in together. And I think it's going to take some strategy sessions, and I'm going to lean heavy on the staff because they're going to know more than I do, right, as I get more involved, obviously. And then the help from the board as well. So I'm going to lean heavy on the people that have been there for a while, but I think we can do it. And we're going to start, you know, I think middle of December, we have our last kind of, so this is our busy season, right? So we have up until about, I think the December 21st and then December 22nd, this is going to be our job, is to really figure out, let's look ahead. We have acts booked out, I think, for about the next 6 months with some calendar blockouts for, you know, a year from now. But we have a lot of holes to fill. Mm-hmm. And so what I would love to have our theater filled for the next 2 years and then start, you know, viewing it that, you know, that way, like really getting some longevity here in our planning and then being able to sell subscription tickets. You know, I would love to do that. And that really draws in and keeps our community committed to us as well, that, you know, we're going to be able to offer package deals. The other component to this, too, is I've got some friends in town that have given me their advice and their insight and their wants of the theater. You know, for some of our community members that don't like to drive at night in the dark, you know, can you please have some matinees for us, you know, throughout the winter and the spring and the fall? So there's lots of different components that need to go into how we strategize what we're going to be doing. And I think it's not going to be a small task. I think, again, the bones are there. It's how do we extrapolate all of that and make it even better?
How much does it cost to stage an event in the Panda? I mean, you got to fire up the heating. You have to have staff out there. What's the cost to the organization to have an event happen there? Because it's probably more than most people even think.
So I don't have exact numbers yet. Woody, our treasurer, has indicated that just to open the doors is $1,000. Mm-hmm. And I would, just glancing at financial statements, I think he's right. But this is where I need to do some, roll up my sleeves and do a little bit more work here to understand that. Mm-hmm. I think it would also depend on the type of act. You know, if it's a movie production, I think that's a little bit different than, you know, if we have a live, you know, presentation on the stage. We're also changing right now how we're, in order to get to those types of details, how we're booking our time within our system so that I can look at it and really see what it costs, you know, our overhead costs, you know, per show, per type of show. So if I could come back, you know, delay that answer for about 6 months so I can get back to you with some exact science behind it.
The number I've heard is around $900. That's how it actually just costs as a practical matter.
Yeah.
Which makes it, if the Panda is even going to cover their costs when they get another nonprofit organization like a dance studio or
right.
a theater group in there, it makes it expensive for those other organizations to use the theater, but it's a real cost. Well, it has to be borne somewhere.
Yeah. And the other component to remember, too, is a lot of our internal things that go on are done by volunteers. So I'm heavily reliant, you know, like our cleaning team, our concessions team. If I don't have those volunteers, then that's now an additional cost, right, that I'm going to have to. So when we go to look at this, it's going to be, okay, this is wonderful. I've got our volunteers. But what if I don't have those volunteers? Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm going to have to do this dual, right, look at what are we getting away with? And then what happens if I do need to pay for those services? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of complexity to that. Mm-hmm. And then I'm plugging, hey, thank you to the volunteers, but we really need those volunteers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another shout out. Thanks, volunteers.
Yes, thank you.
Shout out, volunteers.
And volunteer, if you are interested in volunteering, it's, like I said, fun to be there.
It's fun.
Scott, I forgot to be putting on one of the biggest shows in town.
Yeah. Scott and Barbara McLong Street, who run
Yes.
The cleaning crew, they're amazing. They keep that place going. I mean, you should see the inside of the theater after some events. Mm-hmm. But we don't scoop the, contrary to popular belief, we don't scoop the popcorn up and serve it again, right?
No.
Let's get rid of that.
No, we
Let's
do
get
not.
Rid of that idea. We'll never cost cut that.
To tell you the truth, that idea had never come into my mind.
So. It just came to Thanks, mind, Sean. And I was thinking we could probably save some money, but I don't think it's the best idea.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's use our last bit of time here talking about financials and fundraising. And full disclosure, I'm a volunteer for the fundraising committee.
Thank you.
So this is near and dear to my heart, of course, but because in my view, and Sean, you could probably reinforce this, the Panda is never going to survive just on operations, the money from operations.
No.
And people should basically be disabused of that notion that it's a business. They'll make money from the shows that they have there. Kinds of historic theaters require donors to chip in to make it happen.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you know, as I listened to Heather talk, one of the words that came up that I think is going to be a successful or help the panda to become successful or maintain success is intention. Everything we do is intentional now. We have to budget stuff. Heather has to decide, does this show make sense for us? You know, those kind of questions I don't think were asked in the past. As far as fundraising, it's instrumental. We have deferred maintenance issues across the spectrum inside the theater. We just put new HVAC system in at the cost of $115,000. The north wall was restored. Sick Chicken, RIP. Sick Chicken swag is available on the website.
We should probably tell why because Sick Chicken held a place in people's hearts. In the restoration of the North Wall.
I'm the inventor of the Sick Chicken sweatshirt. I was such a Sick Chicken fan.
In the restoration of the North Wall, where the so-called Sick Chicken was, which was painted by basically a disgruntled worker who was repairing the plaster and what wasn't a painter, but the theater owner said, that's part of the deal. You got to paint it. So if he painted what looked like a vomiting vulture on there.
The funny thing is, I have this vision and I think it's going to come true. The Sick Chicken's going to actually be more popular in death than it was in life. Like there's people I've talked to that are like, what are you talking about? Now it's everywhere. So as the artist, we tried to preserve it in one piece. The wall was delaminating, which we were in danger of a nice 10-foot tall, 3-foot section of plaster falling down on the people that were sitting in the row. So it had to come down. We tried to remove it in one piece, and we weren't able to do that. It just started falling apart. We were going to preserve it in some kind of form or frame or something for the lobby. The artist honestly wasn't a big fan of the Sick Chicken. He's a purist, and that was not really how the theater was.
He wanted to restore it to the original 1927.
Yeah. So we were battling in a very kind way back and forth over it. I was pro Sick Chicken. But what happened was, as he went to remove it, he found 60% of the original painting underneath it still intact. So at that point, the board decided to go with what's restoring to the first campaign, which is the highest level of restoration that the theater could have got. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't realize that the interior of the theater of the Panada is really unique. It's never been painted over. It's not been, redone. The Egyptian down in Boise has been painted over and redone. Everything you're seeing inside, the ceiling was redone due to the fact it was falling down. But the walls and the proscenium and the proscenium and the balcony and stuff of the lobby, that's all original paint and everything. So we went back to campaign one, which is the original bird is out there now. But the Sick Chicken was documented like a fine piece of art. Digital photos were taken, Mylar tracings, electronic and visual color samples. And the board is going to reproduce it in some kind of art form. And like I said, you can buy Sick Chicken swag now, hoodies, sweatshirts, shirts, tote bags, and hats. So if you really love the Sick Chicken, show your pride.
The Sick Chicken is going to have a big afterlife.
It's going to have apparently a huge afterlife. So. So that's what happened. But as far as fundraising, one of the things that I sort of maybe missed out on when I was talking about why I got involved was this community was so generous to me. I felt it was time for me to give back to the community. And that's how Sandpoint's always existed. We have a large group of people that have moved here in the last 5 years. The net worth of the socioeconomic status of this community has changed drastically from when I've moved here. And we need those people involved. What we want to do to preserve the theater, to expand its capabilities, and to turn it into a premier establishment for the arts in North Idaho, to where people from Coeur d'Alene will come up here, people from Spokane will come and see a show. It's going to take big money, and we're going to need some of those people out in the community that are new here that understand that's how this place works. And if you're a high net worth individual, all the way down to if you can give $5 once a year, it's all very important. And attending events are important. Mm-hmm. You can donate on our website. We give you tons of places to do it.
Yeah, panada.org to do that. This is an opportunity. The Panada is 501c3, so high net worth individuals that are looking to make, especially right now, end of year donations.
Correct.
It probably has tax advantages for him.
Yeah, we have people that have planned. The museum is a nonprofit that just received a great gift, but there's people who put it in their legacy plans. You know, when they pass, that the money goes to certain places. Mm-hmm. All that stuff's important. And we're really focused on making sure the Panda is here for another 100 years. Mm-hmm. And the board has a really strong plan. We're working with Bowdoin Architecture. We have drawings to do all the stuff we want to do. But it all costs money, you know, and it's anybody that's built a house around here knows that it's not cheap.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the idea of legacy giving. Panada does have an endowment fund. It was started just a few years ago. It should have been nice if that would have started 25 years ago. The idea of an endowment fund is that the donations made to the endowment stay untouched, and the interest that those produce can be used for different purposes like operations, or it could go back into the fund. And the endowment fund right now, it's pretty small still. It just got started a few years ago. Are you trying to promote that in any special way? Or is it just there if we can have conversations with individuals who might be looking at, you know, you can't take it with you, boomers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I will say this, and anything I'm saying that's, you know, can be perceived as negative on how things were done is no disrespect to anybody before. I wouldn't say we've done a great job on grants and fundraising over the last couple of years of my tenure there. We've sort of floundered through the process. As the political landscape has changed federally, a lot of those grants have disappeared. One of the great things that Heather brought up to me the other day was about at the meeting she had with me and Charlotte, the vice president, is that Heather wants to do like searching for grants with us and then run like a P&L basically on it, a budget, if it's going to make sense for us, sort of package up these things. Who are these people we need to get involved with? Who are the people we need to reach out to? Sort of box it up with a nice bow is how she put it, and then hand it over to the grants and fundraising. So the entire organization from executive director through the board are all working in the same direction for grants and fundraising. A lot of times it's been like a gunshot or shotgun. It's like just people are out talking to people and there's not a cohesive movement forward. Heather's very linear thinking in a lot of the way she organizes stuff, which speaks to how I do things. And I think that's a great idea. And we're going to have more pointed effect, and we're going to be able to speak to the community more clearly, more concisely. And then another thing we want to do is have transparency on where the money's going. I don't think the Panada has done a great job at that. You know, people have donated money. They never get a thank you card. They're not even sure. They know the check was cash, but what happened to the money? It just sort of disappears. That's going to change. We're going to document this stuff on levels we haven't before and be able to give those answers back to create that trust with the community that I think has probably fluctuated a lot. Every ED change is like, you know, do you really want to give your money to an organization that's floundering? I think we've done a decent job of keeping it together, but just with what Heather brings and her skills, and we can do a more pointed fundraising attempt. And I do have to shout out Chris Bessler, although he's trying to play it down a little bit. He did disclose he's a part of it. Chris Bessler is fundamental in all the grants and fundraising that have happened in the theater.
And, that's enough of that, Sean.
Yeah, I know. is that an FCC violation?
I do want to mention, though, that so there's like three arms to the fundraising as I see it. There's the endowment fund, in which hopefully we grow that over time. There's donations made to operations, which is critical. We need donations just to keep operations going. But then there's this Century Fund.
Correct.
And the idea there is that that's a capital campaign.
Correct.
So what? Tell us a little bit about what's the Century Fund.
So the Century Fund was put together. It's funny because you're asking me and you know it forward and backward and wrote it, but I'll act like I understand it. Was it 3 years ago? Tell me if I'm wrong.
Fine. Yeah. 2022.
2022. Yeah. See, Heather?
Three years ago.
Yeah. 3 years ago?
That's when it kicked off. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there was a goal. We're falling short of that goal. So we're going to be reassessing. Part of that was we got Ting to step in to match donations. That's about to run out. So anybody out there, corporations, your Kachavas, your Lighthouses,
not to name names.
Your Inland Forest Group. I'm just starting to name some names. Anybody that's looking to support us, we are going to be speaking to all those businesses about stepping up to be the next potential match for that Panada. We also are going to go for the Panada. We're going to go back into the Century Fund and basically revise numbers, show where we started, where we ended, where we fell short of the goal. Internally, we're going to identify why we fell short of the goal, and sort of repackage the Century Fund. We love the name, and repackage it with new numbers and go back to the community. And like I said, a more linear focus pointed attempt to reestablish that to the next level.
Mm-hmm. And right now you mentioned Ting. Ting made a magnificent donation or commitment to the Panadud to match individual donations up to a total of 200,000.
So yeah, they've been a great partner.
If you donate, we're in an end of year campaign right now, looking for people to donate. If you do donate to the Century Fund in that period of time, it's going to be matched by Ting. So doubles your donation. That's an extra motivation for people to make a donation because the effect will be twice as much.
Yeah, and that's we're looking for that next corporation. And as I sat here, I thought of five other ones I could name check, but I won't do that. But we will be contacting these companies directly one-on-one and sitting down as a team and, you know, have an actual laid out plan of what's going to happen with their money and why it's important they do this for their community and for their business.
Mm-hmm. So look for that, folks. If you don't get a request in the mail, and actually there was a bigger mailing made this year, including some folks that had not previously been received a end of year donation request. You can go to the website, panadud.org. Up in the upper right hand corner, there's a green donate button. You can go there and make a donation. And we got just a few minutes left. Let's pivot to so what's some big events coming up at the Panada?
Well, we are excited to have our Shook Twins with John Craigie this weekend, this Saturday. And we're almost sold out. I checked ticket sales yesterday. We are having a VIP event before that concert, 1 hour before, which is going to be super fun. Caitlin is and her sister are going to come over for an hour before the show and entertain. Mm-hmm. So that's coming up. And then we've got the Nutcracker, excuse me, next week. I mean, I've got my phone here. Let me. We've got the Nutcracker coming with Ballet Victoria next week. We're doing a live radio show with yours truly, or yours truly.
The KRFY Holiday Spectacular.
Yes,
so it's going to be broadcast from the Panada stage on Friday, December 5th.
Yeah. Yes, yes. We have the Gothard Sisters coming back on December 6th. And I mean, I could go on. We've got a ton going on in the next 3 weeks.
I think there's a Celtic Christmas coming up.
There is.
Yep. Music Matters Christmas concert on December 9th. Yeah, you're really packed up right up through Christmas.
We are. Yeah. We even have David Da Vinci coming back on Friday, December 19th.
A magician. Yes. He is terrific.
Thrillusionist. Can't say that word.
Thrillusionist. Even more exciting than a magician.
Yeah, and some fun Christmas movies. So we've got a lot coming up. If you're looking to go celebrate the holiday season with your family or friends, please consider coming down to the theater for one of our shows.
Yeah. And some of these shows are going to be sellouts.
Yes.
The Celtic Christmas, the Gothard Sisters, those two are bold. If you're interested in those, go get a ticket now.
Yes.
They could sell out. And then you have Shook Twins on Saturday.
This Saturday,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you better grab a ticket now because there's only a few left at this point.
Correct.
Yeah, don't sleep on it like Sandpoint does. And one thing that we started doing at the Panada, which I think is a new thing for us, is the VIP VIP experience that Heather talked about, for example, the Shook Twins. You meet in the little theater ahead of time. There's provided appetizers and wine and beer, and you get to meet the artist. I think Ballet Victoria is doing it, or the Kiev Ballet, one of the two, are doing the same thing. And you get an opportunity to see these people in a different space that you don't get to see them. And that includes reserved seating, so you don't have to line up in the snow or the cold. Mm-hmm. And you can get the premier seatings that we block out for the VIP customers.
Well, you can get in ahead and claim a seat. Yes. But we should mention the Panada is always kind of operating in a small D democratic idea that, you know, if you want a good seat, wait in line. But we're also looking at the reality that the Panada needs to operate as a business and a VIP event that people contribute more to actually helps the Panada.
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
Another thing that I've seen since I've been there, and this is, I can't say I haven't done it myself in the past, but people wait in line, they come in, they throw their coats down in a seat, and then they go to another business and patronize that business for either dinner or drinks. We don't serve dinner, so I get that concept. But if you're going to have a glass of wine or if you're going to have a beer somewhere, have it at the Panada. We have a bar down at the stage where you can gathering.
Commingle
in front of the stage. And, you know, spend your money at the Panada if you're there for the night. Don't just come in, throw your jacket in a chair, leave for an hour, and come back.
Yeah. Concessions are important.
Concessions are where we make a lot of our money. Some of these acts were to break even just to get these people in the door.
And, you know, there's so much more to talk about. We didn't even get into the little theater and the potential that has a small performance space and also to augment the operations of the main theater. The whole idea of what we might be doing with the lobby pretty soon.
Well, you're so amazing, Chris. I'm sure you could probably get us back here.
Maybe we can.
We're just right down the street.
I don't know. I got to ask a tougher question. You should be saying, oh, that hurt, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, KRFY is known for their hardball interviews, so, especially with community members. But we will take hard questions if you've got them.
Yeah.
We can handle it.
Okay. Well, do you have anything you want to throw out here before we wrap up?
I just want to tell the community that really, I mean, I'm not just blowing smoke, so to speak. You don't have to hit the delay button, Chris. We are super excited to have Heather White on board. I mean, I can't tell you the changes that I see coming to this place. And I just look forward to the next year and see the work that she's going to do. The staff and her are going to do some great things together.
Thank you. And I told my Kiwanis friends the other day, I'd love to come back in 6 months and report back to them about, you know, our achievements that we've, you know, within just a short amount of time. So I think it's really important, and I take this role seriously, that I do want to report back to our community and let them know that what we're doing to help develop that trust. So,
well, Heather White and Sean Beam, Panada people, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
And speaking with us.
Thank you for having us, Chris.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it.